Welcome to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast for January 7th, 2012. Happy New Year! I'm Beth Below, and I'm founder of The Introvert Entrepreneur. The Introvert Entrepreneur is a personal and professional development company that provides services for introverts and those who live, work, and play with them. Our goal is to create empowered, productive environments where introverts can flourish. The key to that is understanding and appreciating what it means to be an innie in an outie world. Our professional services are designed for entrepreneurs, corporations and organizations, and individuals who want to focus on their professional development. Information and inspiration are also provided through the blog, this podcast, and our Facebook community. You can learn more about The Introvert Entrepreneur at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. For this first podcast of the new year, I'm going to share with you an interview I did back in the fall of 2011, but saved for now because the timing is too perfect. Because maybe you've been among the millions of people who use the new year as a catalyst to make changes in their lives. And my guess is that within those throngs of people, the vast majority make some sort of resolution about their physical health. Whether it's to be more active or take up a sport or to learn how to relax and not feel like they have to go full throttle all the time. We all know that physical activity is key to our overall health, and my guest today takes that truth even further by sharing with us the mental game that contributes to our health and our success. He calls it the athlete within, and it's not just about being able to run around the track and not collapse when you're done. It's about taking care of yourself, body, mind, and spirit, so that you can have energy for all of the things you want to achieve, whether those are personal goals or professional goals. Athletes from all over the country have been seeking out Mike Margolis for close to 35 years for his expertise in helping them live up to their potential. They've sought his counsel and unique teaching style to learn about the game within the game. Mike founded Sports Psychology Consultants in 1983 and has helped almost 2,000 athletes over the years. Mike has taught at 4 universities and completed research at the United States Olympic Training Center. His new book is called The Athlete Within You. It is for athletes and non-athletes working to achieve more in life. Mike, welcome to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks, Beth, for having me in.
Well, let's kick off with something you talk about, which is the athlete that we all have inside us. Tell us a little bit about what that athlete is and what its purpose is.
Well, when I talk about the athlete within us, I'm not just talking about the physical skills, the need of a person to run further or faster or compete in soccer or football or something like that. I'm talking about that vibrant person inside us that is really looking to achieve and succeed at a given task or a given calling that they have. So whether that's in business, their personal life, as a public speaker, or really anything, it's that person that's inside us that really does want to achieve something in life.
Yeah, and I just had this, I've read a few books, I suppose, that were written from a sports analogy perspective or an athletic perspective, but are really talking about what you just shared, which is the having a vibrant inner drive that brings us to succeed. And one that had a big impact on me was Mastery by George Leonard, I think. Are you familiar with that one?
I am. I was more impacted by his first book, which I'm going to blank on right now. It was called The Ultimate Athlete. And I read that book. That was a required reading when I was an undergrad. And it was really talking about that being an athlete was more than just being good at a physical skill, and that it took much more, and that sport actually transcended a lot of our life. you could have experiences through sport, particularly, that were really different, that it gave you a different feeling mentally. You know, it was kind of like he would talk about how if you're an athlete and you're really into doing it, you know, sometimes you have almost this third-person picture of yourself competing. And when you look through the literature, you'll see athletes talk about that they watch themselves throw up a basket, you know, to shoot that basket that won the game. You know, it's almost, you know, it gets a little fuzzy for some people. But if you're somebody who has competed in athletics at a high enough level, and even sometimes at a lower level, you felt that at one time or another. There's another really cool book, I can't think of the author's name right now, called A Sweet Spot in Time, where they talk about this transcendence of the person through sport. But the same thing holds true for any kind of activity or anything that you really get into. I've talked to business people that, you know, they've been in a business meeting and, you know, they have this, you know, the light bulb goes on how they're going to solve this huge problem. And it's like they're watching it all unfold in front of them. So yeah, no, mastery is good. And like I said, the ultimate athlete, you know, there's something inside us, you know, whether you want to call it a competitive free spirit, that wants to help us become the best that we can be. And sometimes that spirit lies kind of dormant.
Well, that was going to be kind of my next question is sometimes I feel like I'm really in touch with that athlete, you know, that driven and part of myself, and other times I'm just tired. You know, and I just want to, you know, sit on the couch, metaphorically speaking, and kind of take the easy way. So how can we like reignite that athlete within us and channel it, get in touch with it when we're feeling that sort of exhaustion or overwhelm?
Well, I guess it depends on if you're talking about, or what you're talking about, I guess I should say, whether it's, you know, you actually want to get up and get out and do something sporty or exercise, or whether you're even referring to, you know you've got something to do business-wise and, you know, you've got to get up and go do it, but you don't really have the energy. And I think what this taps into is understanding your motivation, understanding where you come from. And those are some of the things, you know, motivation, understanding your motivation, understanding your why you do things can help get you up off the couch. Because if your why is strong enough, it'll help you overcome that lack of energy feeling. And then there's some other things we can do, of course.
Yeah. Any tips for, you know, how do you get to the why?
Well, I think part of that is, number one, you ask yourself the question. And that's not a question that a lot of people want to ask themselves, because it gets into things like, well, you know, that's what my parents told me I was going to do. It's what my professors told me I was going to do. Sometimes it's, well, it was just kind of natural, but I've never really thought of, you know, I do this for a living, or, you know, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, and I do it because it earns money, but, you know, I'm not really in touch with that why anymore. And maybe they once were and they've forgotten. But, you know, when I teach motivation, you know, if you can imagine, most of the time as a sports psychologist, I'm asked in to talk about either motivation, mental toughness, or some of the skills related to how you use hypnosis or imagery rehearsal or something like that. And when I'm asked to talk about motivation, most everybody's kind of expecting some kind of incarnation of a a Tony Robbins, right? And that makes sense, right?
Yes, yeah, that's the name that popped into my head as soon as you were saying that.
Okay, good. And
Yes.
so Robbins will go and he'll get everybody kind of fired up and he'll say something to the effect of, if you really want to be here, if you're really excited, raise your hand and give me an I. And you get 1,000 people jumping up and saying, I. And so I'll do that for the crowd that I'm with. And people kind of look at me a little bit strange when I do it, perhaps. But, and I said, good. Now that's going to last you for another 10 minutes. Because it's not really getting in touch with your motivation. And I think this is a really good one for your, especially knowing what I know about introversion and things. It's called being amped up. And it's how we find our motivation and what motivates us. And being amped up really goes down to, if you think about an isosceles triangle, and on one of the upper legs you would have autonomy. Where do you find the freedom to do what you want to do? And that's the first leg of motivation. The second leg on the opposite side would be mastery. What are you good at? What do you get? When you're working on something and you get better and better at it, and you start to gain some mastery, that really propels you and motivates you to keep going. But the bottom part of the triangle is purpose, the P in AMP. And that's the why. Why are you doing what you do? If you don't have a purpose, if you can't define that purpose, it's probably pretty hard to get off the couch. Even with being highly motivated or having autonomy. And the thing that we do know from all the research and from working with, I've worked with a couple of thousand people now, is that that purpose isn't an external thing usually. If we say, well, I do this for money, which is an external motivator, that's probably not even true. It's true probably for a very few people, but it's if you define it as what does the money do for you? It provides for my family. At certain levels, we've seen over the last, I don't know, 7 to 10 years, I guess, the what motivation has, or the money motivation from somebody like a Bill Gates does, where his philanthropy has become his major motivator. So yes, he's still, with Microsoft earning money and is wildly rich and is trying to earn more money, but the money has been repurposed for something far more important. So when you understand what that purpose is, it makes it real easy to say, I can sit on the couch and not get a whole lot done and be down and not have the energy to move forward. Or, if I get out there and do the things that I've been planning through my mastery and through my work and my goals, then I'm really into, well, if I'm going to meet those things, then I'm going to go out there and do it, even if I don't want to or I don't think I have the energy to.
I love so many points that you brought up. I'm not even sure where to start with
I should have slowed
responding.
down,
No,
and I know
it's
better.
great. No, it's great. It's great. Just because you were, so many things were popping up as you were sharing, and one of those, I love the point about the internal versus external motivation, because there have been actual studies in terms of measuring the influence of external stimuli and rewards and whatnot, and how an introvert responds versus how an extrovert responds. And an introvert is much more internally motivated. And that's why I think what you're sharing here about being really clear on your purpose and the why is so powerful, because we're not necessarily, yes, money is a necessary thing in our society, and it allows us to do certain things, but ultimately to get us off the couch, to move us past overwhelm, having that clarity of purpose and to be able to have that be an internal barometer is so critical.
Yeah, and I've done this. I'm one of the other things that I'm asked to speak about a lot is goal setting. And when companies set goals, when even when entrepreneurs set goals, it's often driven by a dollar figure. I've got to earn X number of dollars this month. In a big corporation, it might be to the sales team, you got to earn these kinds of dollars. Even we're going to produce this new kind of software or this new widget or gadget, and it's attached to some kind of external reward or an external figure that's either that's usually money driven or something like that. Because it's part of goal setting is that you are able to measure what you've accomplished. And the problem with that is that people don't, if somebody else is setting the goal for them. And it's this external thing, and they're internally motivated, which are really what drives those people that are most successful in life. You have to look at it a little different way. I look at, in one of the ways that I help people with their internal, that internal drive with those goals is to ask them, some pretty peculiar types of questions. So when they pick that goal that might be external, they've got to tell me what it's going to taste like when they reach that goal, or what it's going to smell like. Because if it's that external goal that they're thinking of, you really have to change it around and internalize it somehow. And so by getting somebody to put some kind of visceral feeling to it, whether it's visual, auditory, kinesthetic, or even olfactory, what does it smell like when you reach that goal? Somebody might be thinking about, well, they've got to earn X amount of dollars every month, and they haven't really associated with the new house that they're going to buy to provide for their family. So you get them to think about, what is that, or maybe it's a new car. And what's that new car smell like? That new car smell that I don't particularly like, but a lot of people get really turned on by. You have to, all those other, there's tons and tons of studies that show us how much more effective being internally motivated is than being externally motivated. There's a really good book that's been popular the last couple of years, and it's a book called Drive by Daniel H. Pink, and he talks about this this triangle kind of thing. He doesn't call it being amped up, but that's the sports psychologist in me that has kind of stolen that part from him. Because he talks about it in terms of autonomy, mastery, and purpose, which I've been talking about it not necessarily using those words, but in the same kind of way for a long, long time. But Pink talks about all these studies that show that if you have any thought process that's involved in creating something for your business or for your life that isn't just, a parts assembly, then if internal motivation works so much better than external motivation. And certain companies are starting to understand that. Google understands it more so than a lot of other companies, and that's why we see new products being produced by them all the time. I think Apple understood it in some ways better than say Microsoft does. But there's when you become internally motivated, when you can find that purpose, especially, you're going to be far more successful.
Yes, and that was one thing that I that jumped out at me in the in Drive, which was that also that emphasis on freedom, like
Yes.
the autonomy of especially even the creative process, and I use the word creative loosely because I think creativity is not just about art or, music. It's innovation and whatnot, and freedom is so critical to making those things happen. I think that's why Apple, like you said, is a great example of that.
Well, even when I'm talking not just to business people, but I'm talking to athletes and coaches, there are certain coaches that have a very regimented, their practices are very regimented. It's the typical or the stereotypical, I should say, football or basketball coach. If you've watched, a number of the movies that have come out over the last 5 to 10 years, when you look at their practices and, somebody speaks out of turn and they're running, they don't do a drill right, so they have to do these penalty things. And but somewhere in there is what I'm telling these coaches is you have to give your athletes an outlet for some kind of freedom and autonomy. So maybe it's, during the off season they get to go do, they still have to do certain kinds of fitness, but it's now their choice. When they're on the field, I work with a lot of soccer players across the country, and some of them, they're in very regimented systems and they're not allowed to dribble very much, and but they have to be able to find some way to express themselves on the field in order to find that freedom and that autonomy because it makes them a stronger player. And so that holds true also for entrepreneurs and for people that are professionals, is they need to find, maybe they've got a little, they've got a little bit of a wild hair in their background, and they have to kind of let the hair down every once in a while in business, even though it doesn't seem like what they wanted to do. I mean, back 10, 15 years ago, we saw it a lot when all of a sudden, companies were saying, okay, on Friday, you don't have to wear the suit and tie. You can wear anything you want. They were starting to understand that regimenting people in their daily professional lives was a little bit too much and too constraining.
And you're reminding me that, whether you're in a corporate environment or an entrepreneur, it's so important to challenge those shoulds of how we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to be showing up, because it's not very, again, that if it's a should, it's really an external motivation because that should is something that's been imposed on us. And when we're able to see through that or past it and remove that those assumptions and expectations, we can get to that kind of freedom of expression and be find that find our why, I our personal why instead of someone else's why
Right.
a lot easier.
Well, I mean, there are different aspects of it. I mean, you need that freedom part. You need to work at being good at something, which is part of that athlete within us. The striving for being better at something. And then there is the purpose, the finding why you're doing, why are you working so hard to get better at something? And these things are really the things that, to steal Pink's title, that drive us.
We've touched on a couple of things here. We've touched on motivation and using imagery to, help with that motivation. I know another thing you talk about is relaxation as being a skill that we can develop and something that's important. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how we can bring more of that into our lives?
We live in perhaps the most stress-filled time in our history, in the sense of everything is go, go, go. I mean, all I do is look at, the high school kids that I coach, and they've got tons more homework than I ever had, and yet they're still expected to get A's. They're still expected to go out for sports, perhaps do music at the same time, and then they might have, family activities and everything like that. Same thing for us as adults is, I don't necessarily know very many people anymore that work an 8-hour day. Everybody talks about 10 to 12 hours is what their day is, because when they get home, if they're an entrepreneur or a professional, they're spending some time doing social media stuff that, some of it is for their entertainment, but a lot of it is business oriented. And we have money pressures that our parents didn't have. We have, commitments that we have to meet. And somewhere along the line, we have to be able to find some time for ourselves. And a lot of people, going all the way back into, obviously, into the 60s and 70s, found it through some kind of meditation. I mean, people have been doing meditative states for thousands of years. It's as old as mankind. But in our go, go, go kinds of lives, we tend to forget that we need to take that time for mindfulness, to let our minds clear so that we can be focused. And relaxation is something that we need. I mean, it used to be that people would take their vacations to be able to relax. I find more and more people take vacations now to, yes, they're relaxing and they're unwinding, but because they're either a type A personality, a lot of times they're still going and they're not really relaxing. But it really is beneficial for us to be able to take some time and relax. And there are a lot of different ways to do it. There are a lot of people that are resistant to things like meditation because sometimes they put a religious connotation that's associated with it. There are people like myself that are resistant to yoga, not because it has meditative or, what could be construed as some kind of religious connotation to it, but because it hurts.
Yeah, we resist what hurts.
It hurts. And, I'm not, even when I played college football and college soccer, I couldn't have gotten myself into those positions. But there are other ways to do that. And, I teach people to relax all the time using a number of different methods that range from progressive muscle relaxation, which is the first technique I used and learned over, well, I'm going to tell you that I learned this over 35 years ago, and then
When
I'll
you were
say
5 years old, when you
I was
started?
5 years old when I did that,
Yeah.
and getting ready to graduate from college. I was a prodigy at five.
Exactly.
To other kinds that involve guided imagery, some that involve hypnosis, but there are other ways that are far more acceptable to our, let's say, our Western minds, to our left brain lifestyles that make sense to some of us that have these logical minds. Because if I ask you or I ask your listeners, as long as they're not driving, to squeeze their fist together and make a fist and squeeze it tighter and tighter. And so they put a lot of tension into their fist, and then they just kind of let the fingers go and curl. That's relaxation. It's because it's the opposite of tension. So if we were to go through progressively from your hands to your forehead to your eyes and down your body all the way to your legs, by the time we relaxed all those muscles, we would accomplish the same kind of thing that you would get if you were doing transcendental meditation or, some kind of Buddhist meditation or Hindi meditation or even some other more Western religion meditation, which is what a lot of prayer is. So we get to the same point, but it's very left brain, which allows us to tap into our right brain and relax our mind and our body.
And we in the Western Hemisphere have a special gift for that type A layer, putting a type A mentality on top of some of these wonderful tools. And I think specifically of yoga. It's become something more athletic in some cases than meditative, and people forget its roots.
Yeah, it absolutely has, and that turns some people. It makes it acceptable for some people, and for others, because turning yourself into a pretzel doesn't necessarily work. They can't do it, but there are methods like progressive relaxation and guided imagery that very easily can help somebody relax. And once you, relaxation for me, as I have learned it and I have taught it for 35 years, is a skill. And I can sit here and relax inside of 30 seconds in a minute or a minute. But when I first started to learn how to do it, it took 20 minutes. So it's an acquired skill that you can work on. And with the athletes I work with, it's a necessary skill because every great athlete is able to control their bodies and relax their muscles at will. When you run, when you jump, when you throw or catch a ball or hit a ball, whatever you're doing, whatever game you're playing, it's a matter of understanding and being aware of your muscles and being able to relax some and tense others in a proper sequence. You don't need to use all of your muscles in a tense state when you're competing. Some people that are listening to this might remember seeing a poster of, say, somebody like Magic Johnson, or not Magic Johnson, but Michael Jordan going up to dunk a basketball, and he's flying through the air with balls up high, and his tongue is hanging out. And it's hanging out because there's no reason to have tension in his jaw. He's completely relaxed except for the muscles that he needed to get up in the air. So from an athletic standpoint, there's really good reason to be able to do that. From a mental standpoint, for all of us, it helps us recharge our batteries. I mean, Edison talked a lot about taking power naps, where he could take a 10-minute nap and re-energize so that he could work, 18, 20 hours a day with taking these little 10-minute power naps. A lot of our creative geniuses over time have done the same kind of thing. What they've done is they've found time to relax. And whether it's using something like progressive muscle relaxation or guided imagery or meditation or yoga or something else, you still have to find that 10 minutes, that 30 minutes to become mindful and clear your head, and it makes sleep easier, it re-energizes you, it allows you to go out and get off the couch and stop eating your Doritos and go out and do things because you now have energy to do them.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the sleep because I was thinking about the first time I had this awareness of the tension that I was carrying in my face as I was trying to sleep. Like my eyebrows were knitted together. And so I think, at least what I learned from that is that often I'm carrying tension in different parts of my body that doesn't need to be there, and is serving no purpose, just like your Michael Jordan thing. And having an awareness of that is so huge.
You look at people that complain at the end of the day about having a migraine headache or a tension headache, and I see these people, and I've got a good friend that called me the other day and said she was wearing her shoulders as earrings. But you see these people that are working in professional settings. I've seen physicians that are this way, that you see them in the morning and they're smiling and relaxed, and at the end of the day, after seeing too many patients, their shoulders are up near their ears, and they've already hit the painkillers to get rid of the headache. And yet, if they had been aware that, somewhere around after lunch or 2 o'clock, that their shoulders had started to creep up and up and up, they could have then easily have relaxed those shoulders, and they wouldn't have that headache at the end of the day, and they wouldn't go home and kick the dog and do those
Right.
kinds of things.
Yell at the kids and
Yell at the kids and, or kick the kids and yell at the dog, something like that.
Right. Something like that. Generally have an unpleasant evening.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't claim that, it's an introvert extrovert kind of thing, but I'm guessing there are some introverts who are working in that kind of pressure environment or, fast paced or lots of people that might experience that kind of situation very acutely.
The halls of Microsoft are filled with introverts
Exactly.
because they're programmers and they're testers and they thrive almost in that environment from the standpoint of that they're kind of left alone to do their thing. The problem is that they're also, you're not done yet. and they there's a it's a pressure cooker also. And then they're not dealing very well with it because now they're not alone because they've got people coming by and saying, I need that code, I need that code. And they have to find a way to be able to deal with that as well.
So what's, you shared a little bit about the awareness and maybe a power nap and whatnot. Any other switches that can be flipped to help in those kinds of situations?
I really like the use of guided imagery and self-hypnosis. These are things that you can learn and do for yourself that don't take a lot of time once you've learned to do them. And then you can give yourself suggestions to absolutely flip that switch. I mean, I've worked with people where once it's been anchored with them, the trigger is, okay, now that you're relaxed, I want you to go over to the light switch and flip it on. And as soon as you do that, you'll have your energy and you'll have your focus and you'll understand your purpose again and you can go forward.
So
And
literally flip a switch.
literally flip a switch. For others, the metaphor might be something different. It might be, for a writer, you're going to come in and you're going to, before you start, you're going to touch your favorite book because you get amped up by the thought of being a writer like that person or, something like that. Something to trigger or flip the switch. It's easy enough to do when you actually think about it. Guided imagery of seeing yourself being successful and or being energetic. I mean, I have to do it if I'm going to a party or something. I have to go through and envision myself enjoying myself at the party and not just hanging out and waiting for other people to approach me, especially if it's a business-oriented kind of thing.
Great point. That resonates with me because I tend to I haven't tried it with parties and I should try, that would be a good thing to try, but I have done it with like big events like a conference. And so I do kind of a mental dress rehearsal and imagine how is the day going to unfold and seeing myself.
And if you match that up with what your goals are, if you've thought about what your goals are, and I don't mean collecting 50 business cards, but maybe it's something like meeting three people I want to meet and have and start a relationship with and a business relationship with, or get to know three people more than just understanding what business they're in.
Well, I'd like to, before I move to closing this, we've already mentioned a number of resources. We've talked about Mastery and The Ultimate Athlete, Sweet Spot in Time, Drive. Another one that comes up for me is The Inner Game of Tennis. And I'm wondering what you would recommend for people who want to learn more about either the relationship between sports psychology and, the mental game, or, getting some grounding in these tools of self-hypnosis or guided imagery.
Well, there's a really good book, now that you mention it, that just came out in late July. And it's called The Athlete Within You, and it's a mental approach to sports and business. The author's a personal friend.
Do you know him very
I
well?
know him very well. His name is Mike Margolis.
Excellent. What a coincidence.
Yeah, what a coincidence. The book is available at Amazon.com, and it's not a workbook. It's kind of a journey to help people understand what sports psychology or the skills involved in sports psychology can do for them as athletes, as well as people in business. How do you apply things like relaxation and imagery to sports or to business? So I'm quite happy with it. It only took me 32 years to finish. I had a contract 32 years ago with a big publishing house, and I couldn't do it then. And I've worked on it bits and pieces over time, but I was able to get it done literally this last year, and mostly the last 3 months of from April to late June. There are other books like Mind Gym for the sports psychology people that are, the people that are interested in. To me, it's a little bit of a hard read, but it's got some really good stuff in it. There's a cool book called The Games Do Count, and that one's by an ESPN guy named Brian Kilmeade. I met Brian at a conference, and that's how I found out about his book. And it's basically stories about different people. Everybody from a Jon Stewart, Tony Robbins, Geraldo Rivera, Henry Kissinger's in here, Condoleezza Rice is in here, Howard Schultz is in here, which will either make people really happy here in Seattle or start a runaway kind of thing. There's a really good one. Who's the comic? Mork.
Oh, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams is in here. And Robin Williams talks about how he was on a college soccer team, sitting on the bench almost all the time. But he learned how to be a comic and how to deal with adversity and not being successful all the time by being an athlete. And that's what this book is all about, is that more so than just a game, it teaches people about life and how to be successful. And so it's a group of stories about these famous, mostly famous people.
Great. And that one's called The Games Do Count.
The Games Do Count by Brian Kilmeade. So for everybody out there that doesn't think sports are important for their kids, they should read about these people that only played through maybe high school, but the things that they learned, even sitting on the bench, were important to what they were able to do later in life.
Well, and congratulations on the publication of
Thank
your
you.
book. That very long journey.
Yeah, everybody should go out and buy it.
Yes, absolutely. I'm looking forward to getting my copy because I think what it sounds like it's definitely going to build on and connect the dots and expand on what we've been to just touching on the surface of
Yes,
here.
absolutely.
So, continuing along the theme of books, but to wrap up our conversation, I like to ask all of my guests this particular question. And this is, if you were granted a year's vacation, just 1 year, on Introvert Island, and you could only take three books with you, which three would you take with you and why?
Well, it doesn't count. I know that there's a copy of this out there somewhere where it's not three separate books, so it's one book, but I would take Tolkien's trilogy, one big book.
Yeah, my husband has it, so it exists.
And I'd count The Hobbit as part of that, but even if most people don't. And I do that, I think everybody needs a chance to get away from things. And if I'm on this island, I envision an isolated desert island with not a whole lot of interaction with anybody. So I want to be able to get away from those kinds of troubles and focus on a fantasy that you have lots of time to be part of and envision. I'd actually bring, there's not a newish biography out, but it's been out for 3 or 4 years now, or I guess about 4 years now, on Albert Einstein, which is a really interesting journey about probably one of the greatest minds in history. And I've always been a huge fan of Einstein. In fact, in my office, I have a picture of Einstein on one wall with his quote, "Imagination is more important than knowledge." And then on the opposite wall, just opposite him, is Sandy Koufax. And then Sigmund Freud is right next to Einstein. And both of them actually were friends of each other. There's a whole series of letters they wrote back and forth to each other. And I focus on Einstein because of his trying to unravel the secrets of the universe, but also because it shows that even though most people think of him as a single-minded individual that was totally focused on, finding the secrets of the universe, and yet so much of what he's written about has been politics, it's been how we treat each other as human beings, about his view of spirituality. And there's a lot of things that this man focuses on, and it shows us that we can have a diverse way of thinking and still focus in on that one thing that makes us great. I don't know about a third book. A third book, if I'm stuck on this island, I might not be able to mention to your listeners because they'd think I was too out there. So I would take those two books and probably some other kind of fantasy.
Well, I love that idea of taking some fantasy because it's for me, it's something I have a little bit of trouble escaping into, especially reading. And what a great opportunity when you've been able to block out all the distractions of the world to spend
But
time
for
there.
yeah, but for all your other introverts that are going to this island, they can take my book.
Exactly. I was going to
And
say
that way they can help, and then
that.
they can find a creative way to get off the island when they need to.
Yeah. Does it
Or,
have some survival skills?
well, they can, it'll teach them to use their imagination to figure out how to find those survival skills.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. Well, Mike, it's been such a great pleasure speaking with you, and I'm wondering how people can learn more about you and what you have to offer, and if you could repeat how they can find your book.
Okay, well, they can find me and my book, but they can find me in particular at on my website, which is www.thementalmental, that's TheMental, hyphen or dash game, GAME.com. And there's probably a reference on the website on how to find my book. So they can find me there. They can find me at mikemargolis.com, which is my blog site, where I talk about how sports psychology explains the world, and I cover everything from my latest blog was about the relationship, well, not the relationship, but the passing of Steve Jobs and Al Davis, who was the owner of the Oakland Raiders, and how these two very different individuals had some very interesting similarities. And my book is on Amazon. All I have to do is type in The Athlete Within You.
Yeah, and I bet you appreciate reviews and
I would love some.
of the good time.
I would, as my mother always said, if you like what you heard, like what you read, please tell everybody. And if you didn't, be good and don't say a word. Of course, my mother wasn't that type, and she would have said a lot of words, regardless of what she told me not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'd love some reviews, and people can contact me through that. They can then contact me through Skype. I work with people via Skype all over the country and starting to do some things worldwide. We got some really interesting things coming up with some hypnosis, guided imagery, MP3s that are going to be sold by a worldwide company, and that'll be coming out this November, and they'll be able to find stuff on my website about that too. And that's a really exciting project.
Congratulations with all of that, and thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be chatting with us.
Oh, you're very welcome, Beth. And athletes come in all shapes and sizes, and there are a great many that are introverted and just need a little bit of help to find that, well, can I say it, that athlete within them. So,
You can say
all
it.
right.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
So, are you ready to hop off the couch and stretch both your physical and mental muscles? I know I am. And I plan to keep learning more from Mike, and I hope you will too, by visiting his website, themental-game.com. The new year is a perfect time to take stock of your life and business and invest in yourself so that you can reach the goals that are so important to you. Even with the support of family and friends, you're sometimes missing someone who will help you see things with new eyes, who will challenge you and encourage you and hold you accountable. That's where thousands of entrepreneurs and professionals call in a professional coach. It's an investment in yourself and your business. And you can learn more about my coaching services, as well as schedule a complimentary no obligation information session by visiting my website, www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I invite you to share it with friends, family, and colleagues and leave a review on iTunes. You can also find out more about how to hire me for coaching, trainings, and speaking engagements at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. And be sure to join us for more community and conversation and inspiration and sharing on our Facebook community at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thank you so much for listening. Happy New Year. I know 2012 is going to be an exciting, transformative year for all of us. So thank you for spending time with me, and I will see you next time.